Hey, this is Baron Strom, the Strommer from SoccerSpecific.com. We'd like to welcome John Kerr of Harvard University to the Boot Room today. And John is going to just share a little bit about what his background has been in soccer, what started the journey, and where he's at now. John, welcome to the Boot Room.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Great. Hey, tell us a little bit about your journey to the place you're at today.
Geez, I hope you have about 2 weeks because it's been a long journey. My father was a professional soccer player, immigrated from Scotland to Canada initially, where I was born in 1965, and his career took him all over the place. He started his career in Hamilton and Toronto, and then he moved down to Detroit and ended up in Washington, D.C., and in 1972, he joined the New York Cosmos, and they won an NASL title, and he was an NASL All-Star back in 1972. He then was spotted by, in Mexico, a famous team called Club America. He was sent there in Club America for 2 years, and that was another thrill for him, and also me, being 7 years old, now growing up in a total soccer environment.
Yeah.
And so that was a thrill. We ended up back in New York in 1975, where the soccer boom basically took place when Pelé arrived on our shores. And my father was a teammate of Pelé's in 1975. And what a thrill for me, being a 10-year-old kid, ball boy for the Cosmos, and
yeah,
getting to see Pelé, you know, all the time, every week, and sometimes in practice. So that basically enlisted my desire and love for the game. And he ended up back in D.C. the next year, where he retired and became the head of the MLS, or back then it was the NASL Players Association, and ended up growing up mostly in the D.C. area. So from there, I ended up going to Duke University.
Mm-hmm.
4 years there, and was lucky enough to spend a semester abroad in my senior year and got noticed playing in the semi-pro leagues of London, and got an invite to go to Portsmouth for a reserve team game.
Huh.
And the coach at the time was a famous English national team star named Alan Ball, who won,
uh-huh,
the World Cup medal in 1966.
Right.
He actually, after the game that I played for the reserve team, offered me a contract on the spot.
Huh.
And ended up back in England the following summer in July of 1987, and made my debut in the first game of the season when Portsmouth entered back into the old First Division. First time in 27 years.
Sure.
Was in the starting lineup as a 21-year-old recent Duke graduate, and what a thrill that was.
Yeah.
And it turns out that I was the first American soccer player to play, which is now known as the Premier League, but the first American soccer player to play in the old First Division. So from there, geez, I've had more clubs than Jack Nicklaus. But I went to Wycombe Wanderers, I went to Peterborough United on loan, I went to Walsall on loan, I played 3 years at Millwall, I had a year in France at a team called Boulogne-sur-Mer, just across the water from England, and played 4 months in Northern Ireland for Linfield, and played one season in between there in 1991-92 for the San Diego Sockers, where we won the MLS title, or major league, or was it major soccer league title, back in 1992.
Hmm.
And then finished off my career the last 3 or 4 years back in England, and then luckily enough to get signed by MLS and played half a season for the Dallas Burn, and then a year and a half for the New England Revolution.
Hmm.
And then after I was released from the Revolution, I was fortunate to get a coaching / player job with an A-League team called the Worcester Wildfire.
Yeah.
Which became the following year the Boston Bulldogs.
Mm-hmm.
I recruited a famous goalkeeper for the Worcester Wildfire named Anthony Tronica, who's the current Oregon State goalkeeper coach and assistant coach.
Huh.
And he was my first draft pick back in 1998.
Huh.
And in the following year with the Bulldogs, I was able to entice the current Revolution coach, Steve Nichol, to join me as an assistant player. So it was a great opportunity for me to work with a legend from Liverpool on a coaching and playing basis. Huh. And it ended up being my last 2 years as a player. And fortunately for me, I was able to get the Harvard position when it opened up in 1999. And basically, that's where I am. It's a long journey from many miles of the ocean traveled, but an interesting one and a very satisfying one.
Yeah, it sounds like a book in the making. Hey, in the midst of that, you've...
War and Peace, it's called.
Yeah, you've played with the national team some.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit about the experience of being on the national team representing the United States of America, having kids kind of begin to, as you idolize Pele, kids starting to throw up posters and hoping for your autograph. What was that like to kind of emerge as a soccer icon with an emerging generation, as well as what was it like to step onto the field with in a foreign country playing with the red, white, and blue?
Well, it's always a thrill to play for your national team. It's the highest honor you could have as a soccer player.
Mm-hmm.
And I made my first debut in 1984 for the national team in November, and it was a kind of a debut where it wasn't a big game. It was against Ecuador, and there wasn't many people in the stands. So back in the early 80s, the national team wasn't taken as seriously as it is now. So being one of the younger players at the time, I was only 19, and I was still a sophomore at Duke, to get invited was a huge thrill because I knew what it meant to me, my family, my background. But at the time, it wasn't a big deal on the national front of the soccer landscape in this country. However, when we continued on the following year and I was invited to join the World Cup squad in the qualifying rounds for the 1986 World Cup, I was lucky enough to be included with a lot of the, at the time, current NESL players like Hugo Perez and Dan Cancer and Jeff Durgan and all those stars, and was able to secure a starting spot for the last couple of World Cup games. And in fact, as you mentioned, going to a foreign land, I scored a goal in a World Cup qualifying game in 1985 for the U.S. against Costa Rica. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I might be the last person to have scored in Costa Rica for the national team. It was quite a big goal at the time, and a thrill for me personally as my first international goal.
Yeah, I'm sure. So transitioning from being a player, which you have just had a wide range of experience, how do you translate that into being a coach? And what is it that you're looking for in players as you begin to build a program there at Harvard?
Well, that's a good question. And one of the things I lean back in terms of my playing career is that I had a lot of highs, but at the same time, I had a lot of lows, some really down times in my career where it was difficult to play soccer abroad. When, if you think back to the years when I played, American soccer was not on the map. We hadn't done anything in the World Cup, and we weren't taken seriously, so it was very difficult to get tryouts, very difficult to get signed, which makes my life more difficult trying to get a contract. So understanding all these ups and downs has enabled me to relate a little bit more to my players. I mean, obviously, I've had some real good times and some wonderful achievements, winning the Herman Trophy, winning a national title at Duke, winning two youth titles for Montgomery United with another famous American player, Bruce Murray. You know, those kind of things that I've held close to my heart in terms of how to be successful, how to achieve, and all the work that goes into that. But at the same time, there's always been levels of failure and tough experiences that you have to go through where I can also relate those experiences to my players. And I think that is one of the biggest assets that I have to relay to these guys, that I've been through the gamut. I've been through many highs and many lows, and I think that's one of the strong points I offer to my players.
Hey, as you look back on your coming to this place, you talked a lot about your dad and his influence and just kind of taking you across the globe and inviting you to kind of experience the soccer passion of the NASL in its glory days in the mid-70s. What is it that you do with your team now at Harvard to kind of instill in them a passion for the game?
Well, that's one of the things that I do when I watch the kids through the recruiting process is their approach to the game. I look at a lot of things like their warm-up, their relationship with their coach, their relationship on and off the field with their teammates, and the general approach to the game. Are they as motivated in game five of a tournament as they were in game one? Are they continually successful throughout the times that I've seen them? Like we get an opportunity to see them over, you know, 6 months to a year time. Are they consistent in their play, and do they still have that drive to do well? That's kind of some of the things I'm looking for in a player, because in the Ivy League it gets tough as we go down towards the end of the season when it's make or break, and I'm looking for players that can take me over the edge, take me over the hump. And having a love for the game and a desire to play is something that I hold in high regard.
Hey, kind of wrapping this up, one other question, perhaps two. One that comes to mind is, I'm a player of yours, and I might have a specific thing that I think of when I think of John Kerr. I don't play for you, so I don't really know, but what do players say about you? The guys that you've coached, what is the attribute that stands out about John Kerr that they would remark about?
I think it's pretty simple. I think he's got a passion for the game. I love the game. I love every aspect of the game. It's taught me a lot. It's given me a lot. It's I've experienced many fantastic moments because of the game, and I hold it in high regard. I respect the game, and I respect the players and the coaches and the staff, the trainers and the fans that partake in it. And as soon as you lose that respect, then I think your guard drops and you don't perform as well. And that's something that I always consider to be at the utmost importance to me, is this, you know, never lose that passion for the game. And I think that's how people would look at me and describe me in general. They say, oh gosh, that guy loves the game.
Speaking of love for the game, I imagine that John Kerr, you will be involved in soccer the rest of your life. One way or another, it's going to be there. Where do you see yourself in 10 years, 20 years? Soccer has given you a ton, you've already said. What do you see your role in the soccer community being 10, 20 years from now?
Well, I'm heavily involved now at the school at Harvard, and I love the place. I love Boston. I love the area. And I'm also involved in a youth club called FC Greater Boston, and I'm the director coaching there. So getting involved in players' lives, young players, boys and girls' lives, and helping them educate themselves through the game and providing them with opportunities to see the world, to go to high-level tournaments, and also get to the school of their choice, as well as pursue some other professional opportunities. That's my goal, is that if I can enable them to reach a higher level and be a part of it in a positive way, that's my goal. So I don't see many things changing for me in the next 10 years or even 20 years. I really love what I do, and to be involved with kids and playing soccer. And my kids now, I've got three of my own. I've got twins that are 3 and a half, a boy and a girl, Cameron and Alexandra. And I just have a month-old son named Drew that I hope to be involved in their upbringing in this great game as well.
Hey, I asked you what would a player say about you? What do those twins say about you, John?
Well, it's funny. My daughter at this stage, at 3 and a half, is not interested in soccer. She says to me quite comically, "I don't like soccer." But son, on the other hand, Cameron, who's 3 and a half, loves soccer and tells me every morning, "Daddy, I want to watch soccer." So we go over Premier League games on TV that I've taped and watched them constantly, so he's really into it. And my wife actually is a soccer coach herself. She's the women's coach at Providence College, so soccer is not far from our lives personally and professionally, and to be honest, I can't get enough of it.
Well, we could pray for that daughter of yours.
Yeah, exactly. I think she'll, once she figures it out where she's playing, because she's a pretty good athlete, it'll be interesting to see if she, becomes involved in the game.
John, it's been a pleasure, and look forward to just kind of following how your career as a coach evolves, and It's been fun, and I look forward to hearing how those young Kerrs do down the line, and continue the Kerr tradition of being a kind of a pillar in the soccer community in the United States. I am Bernd Strom, the Strommer from SoccerSpecific.com, saying thank you to John Kerr for joining us in the boot room today, and we'll talk to you all soon later. Bye-bye.